Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Also by the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic ingredients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. It's 11:30, and up next, it's Rick Steves speaking on ending marijuana prohibition in Oregon. He was here on October 8th and spoke in support of Measure 91.
Guidebook author and TV host Rick Steves has traveled the world for 30 years and seen how different societies tackle the same problems. Steve shares why this experience makes him concerned about Oregon's current approach to marijuana. So concerned that he traveled around the state to talk about it during a 6-day, 10-city tour. Steve's co-sponsored Washington's successful ballot measure to legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana. In this talk on October 8th in Beaverton, Steve shares Washington State's track record, other countries' track records, and where the drug reform movement is heading.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Boy, you guys, I can understand why Elizabeth is your representative here. It's just great to meet, and thank you for that introduction. I just want to take an hour of your time right now to explain why I think it makes sense to legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana in Oregon. And I want to bring it right back to my whole enthusiasm for travel in a way that problems are protected. So I'm going to give you a little slideshow, and I'm just going to start first about just how travel in general is a very constructive and valuable way to open us up to the world. And then we'll finish that with some drug policy and talk specifically about 91. So I'm going to go pretty fast because we've got it's a big state and we're going all over the place. I just love making this road trip. It is we're just on day two now, and we're 2 years ago in Washington. I did about a 10-day, 15-city trip around our state. Learned a lot about drug policy. Learned a lot about sharing the importance of this issue, and we're doing the same thing in Oregon now. And what I'm doing is bringing sort of a sensibility that I've figured out from Europe, where a joint is about as exciting as a can of beer. And as I'll explain, Europeans smoke much less than we do per capita. I want to stress that. This is not pro-pot. And I firmly believe that use does not go up when the law gets easier. There's no society that's had any indication that use goes up when you take the crime out of the equation. America smokes more than the European average by every government's estimates per capita, and the Dutch, who have the loosest laws, smoke less than the European average. Okay, so that's just an introduction to the counterintuitive stuff that you're going to be dealing with as you people in Oregon decide what's right for you. Now, there's so much to talk about, but I really want to talk about legislating morality. America is really quick to legislate morality. And my friends in Europe, they remind me, a society has to make a choice, tolerate alternative lifestyles or build more prisons. And then they remind me, and you Americans lock up 10 times as many people per capita as we Europeans do. Either you are inherently more criminal, or there's something screwy about your laws. It's a very interesting thing. Prostitution is a good example. In Europe, as sites as tourists, you know there's famous brothels and red light districts, and you go here, and you realize this is not just a celebration of prostitution, it's pragmatic harm reduction. Here, we criminalize and we measure the effectiveness of our laws by how many people do we incarcerate. Over there, they measure it by how do they reduce harm to their society. There's always been prostitution. Nobody says it's good. There's always going to be lonely men with money that'll buy sex, and there's going to be women who will sell it. Okay, you can make any law you want, it's going to happen. In Europe, they decided to take the harm out of the equation, make it safe for the public. Let these women run their businesses, make them be licensed by with doctors checking spreading around diseases, make sure they are licensed, and also understand when they push their emergency button, they're not rescued by a pimp, but that they're rescued by a policeman. That's just the European ideal. Doesn't work perfect, but it's an attempt in Europe to take the crime and the heartache out of the equation by not just moralizing and just saying no, which we're really inclined to do. in Europe, they've got a lot of hard drug problems, just like we do here. When you step into a toilet in much of Europe, you go downstairs in a restaurant and you step into the toilet, blue lights. Blue lights. What's going on? You cannot see your veins. Very frustrating if you're trying to shoot up. Any restaurateur doesn't want junkies in their toilet shooting up. Lock the door, get a warm, comfortable place to do your work, and in Europe they have blue lights to discourage that. And then, across the street, you've got a machine bolted to the bridge like this one in some town in Switzerland that used to sell cigarettes, and now it sells government-subsidized syringes. They're almost free. Americans would say, no, you're encouraging that action. Europeans would say, it's going to happen anyways. Let's stop spreading HIV and give them needles, for crying out loud. The word in much of Europe for addicted is enslaved. These people are not criminals, they're sick people. They don't need cops and lawyers, they need counselors and doctors and nurses to help them get their lives back on track. It is so fundamentally different in Europe, and I'm so thankful to be able to bring that sensibility home when it comes to drug policy reform. Down the street, you'll find a place called a Cafe Fix, and it's a government-subsidized heroin maintenance clinic where people can go to administer their addiction. So they're not getting their drugs on the street from a criminal that doesn't cut it right and then overdose and die. In Europe and in America, we've got a lot of hard drug addicted problems, and 1% of our society has got a struggle with this. In the United States, we lose twice as many people per capita to heroin overdose deaths, 18,000 compared to Europe's 8,000 a year. Europe has a think out of the box, pragmatic harm reduction approach to hard drug addiction. A lot of my tourists will say, look at all these junkies around here. Europe has all these liberal laws. They got so many people taking drugs. They got the same amount of people taking drugs. Their drug addicts are just still alive, and they're not in prison. They're out in the streets being helped, you see. So these are some challenging issues that we can talk about when we think about what's good for our society. This chart is so telling to me, and it just shows the United States locks up 10 times as many people per capita as the European countries. And I just think this is a travesty. And when we look at it, ever since 1970, when we declared this current war on drugs, about 1% of our population has been addicted. It hasn't changed. And we've spent $1.5 trillion trying to criminalize this thing and moralize. It's a losing battle. And it's hard to talk about it because people are afraid their character is going to get assassinated, right? I can talk about it because nobody needs to vote for me and I can't be fired. Once in a blue moon, somebody says, I know what you think about marijuana, we're not going to use your guidebooks and you're not going to take your tours, and all I can think is Europe's going to be more fun without you. I've been talking about this for 15 years. I've been talking about it since it was really dicey to talk about it. I've been a board member of Normal for 10 years. I'm a pretty paltry celebrity, but it's kind of sad how few celebrities want to risk their persona to talk common sense to America on a very important public health issue like this, and a civil liberties issue, and a pragmatic harm reduction issue. And I'm so thankful to be here, reminding my American friends that in Europe, they're really good at pragmatic harm reduction. This is when I'm in Scandinavia during graduation time, May and June, the streets are filled with noisy, drunk teenagers. And I'm going, boy, what a crazy society. And then I talk to people, why do you have all your drunk teenagers out in May and June? And they say, because it's graduation time, and teenagers tend to drink and drive and die at their graduation parties. And Scandinavian parents would rather not force their kids to say they're not going to drink and then have them drink and lie and drive and die. What the parents do is they host the caterers. The parents hire a truck, the kids decorate it, and the kids go with somebody else driving from family to family getting and the parents are pouring the beer. Now that is a tough sell in America, but I'll tell you, in Scandinavia they lose a lot fewer kids during graduation season in drunken driving incidents, you see. And that to me, it might be a little extreme, but that's pragmatic harm reduction European style. And I think it's exciting to think in Europe that they recognize hard drugs are evil and dangerous as can be. Soft drugs, marijuana, can be treated like alcohol and smartly regulated. This is in Copenhagen at a hippie squatter community called Christiania, and you've got posters here that say, okay, marijuana's fun, no hard drugs, all right? Now, when I leave this place, this is Christiania in Copenhagen. It's a squatter community, and you know, a lot of people that live in geodetic domes, and they swap things together, and the kids run around barefoot and hugging trees. And when I leave that place, they say, be careful with your marijuana, because here in Denmark, we have to arrest a couple pot smokers every year in order to maintain favored trade status with the United States of America. And yeah, that's what I thought. And I couldn't believe it at first, and then I've been more and more into this, and I realized that, yes, the United States made a law in the United Nations, extorted every other nation to sign this law, and it requires all nations together to wage trade sanctions on any nation that dares take the crime out of the equation and treat drug abuse as a civil liberty for adults and an education and a health challenge for young people. It's embarrassing. That's why you hear the word decriminalize, because people don't have the nerve to legalize because they're going to deal with a trade war with the United States. That's one example of how hell-bent our country is on keeping this reefer madness war going on against marijuana. And it's very interesting. Now, Europe, it's hard to paint Europe in broad strokes, and every country has a different approach to marijuana, but generally in Europe, a joint is about as exciting as a can of beer, and they just don't, it's just not that big a deal. What they've never done in Europe is figure out the backside like we are here in the United States. How do you produce it and wholesale it and all of that? It's called the gray area in Europe, and the government just says, don't tell me about it, and just let's just, you know, control it and legalize it and this kind of thing. In some countries, they don't want to have it sold in coffee shops, like in the Netherlands. They will let you grow it on your own. And that's an interesting approach because they don't want it to be an industry. So everybody can go to shops in whatever country you like. Here, if you go to Spain, you see a lot of marijuana leaves as shingles hanging out of businesses. And you can get everything you need there to grow your own pot, and then you can enjoy it with your friends. The fact is, most people don't want to go to the trouble of growing it, so they have growers' clubs. And technically, they're growing it themselves, and everybody has access to a couple of plants a year or whatever. But the point is, they're not arresting people for marijuana. In the Netherlands, of course, you can even buy your cannabis starter kit there. And in the Netherlands, you've got the coffee shop model. And the coffee shop model is interesting. Again, they have not dealt with the complicated backside like we are in Washington and Colorado. They just don't really want to know how it's produced in a wholesale kind of way and distributed, and it's usually done in little cottage industries. They no longer import marijuana in the Netherlands. It's all grown locally. They're expert with their greenhouses, and they can get you all the strains you want. I mean, if you like the Moroccan stuff, they can grow it right there, Moroccan style or however that is. In the Netherlands, they realize that it makes a lot of sense just to have your soft drugs here so they can deal with the hard drug problems. Okay, that's a very important thing to remember. It's just they're having the quasi-legal marijuana because they want to focus on the hard drug problems. In Amsterdam, there's an area called Zeedijk, which is the old sailor's quarter. It was a no-go zone for a place a couple decades ago. So dangerous, so many pushes out on the street. There's one bridge called Pill Bridge, because that's where all the pills were sold and so on. And since they have decided to basically legalize marijuana and focus on hard drugs, all of that roughness and scariness in the streets is gone, and these neighborhoods now are gentrified. Very comfortable for people to go out to a nice restaurant at night, and the hard drug population is going down, and it's aging, and the marijuana-taking population is staying the same, and they've taken the crime out of the equation, saved millions of dollars, and helped police refocus on serious crime instead of running down petty pot smokers. It's what works for the Dutch. Now, they've had some pressure from the United States and from conservative groups and Christian groups that they should roll back their coffee shop stuff. And who has dug in to defend the coffee shop approach to things in the Netherlands is the mayors. Because the mayors are the ones that have to deal with crime in the streets. And the mayors are saying, I don't care what the United States is telling or these right-wing Christian groups or whatever. We're dealing with turf wars on the streets, and we don't want the violence on our streets. Our police want the marijuana in these coffee shops. So they know where the drug users are, and they can communicate with the hard drug taking population, and they can deal with the scourge of hard drug abuse in their society. This is very pragmatic. And what has happened in the last year is this attempt to roll it back has failed, and the mayors have had their way, and they still have their coffee shops. In the Netherlands, there's a limit of 500 grams that you can have in inventory in a coffee shop at any one time. That's about 1 pound of marijuana that they can have. You can sell as much as you can sell, but you have to take deliveries of 1 pound at a time. The mayor recently in Amsterdam has actually had as one of his platforms, he wants to raise the inventory to 1 kilo, 2 pounds instead of 1 pound, to cut back on traffic congestion in Amsterdam. It's amazing they're dealing with these practical issues rather than locking people up. The Dutch have so few people in jail that they're renting their empty prison space to the Belgians, who are not quite as advanced. By the way, in Seattle, my friend Pete Holmes is the city attorney, and he was one of the co-sponsors of R502. When he ran for city attorney in Seattle, which is an elected position, the big question was, how are we going to fund a $200 million prison that we need? And Pete said, I have a good idea. If I'm elected, we'll stop arresting pot smokers, and we won't build the prison because we won't need the prison, and we'll save $200 million. We voted for Pete, and we never built that prison, and we're happy about that. interesting stuff, and I want to stress, as I go around the country, I mean, Oregon's a pretty easy audience, frankly. I'd much rather be in Texas talking about it down there. What I know about this is from talking to people who are public servants, people like Elizabeth, who are legislators, dedicating their career to family issues, you know? Two of my favorite legislators in Washington State are very well known in our state for their passion for children's issues, and they were outspoken supporters of 502 because legalizing, taxing, and regulating marijuana is good for children. That's a whole nother lecture. I don't have time to get into that, but the most dangerous thing from a parenting point of view about marijuana is the fact that it's illegal. Because one little indiscretion on a kid, it's going to send them down the wrong road. They can't get a loan, they can't get a job, they can't get into school. Rich white kids are not being arrested. It's poor kids and kids of color. It's a racist law. And local legislators have the courage to speak out of this. They are public safety servants, and they are bold to talk about this. And these are the people that have supported I-502. These are the people that are supporting Measure 91. It's not potheads. 2 years ago, you had a pot-friendly law, and those of us in drug policy reform didn't like it, frankly. We want a law that respects the reasonable concerns of people here for safety for kids, for safety on the roads, for protecting the rights of employers to enforce whatever standards they want in their workplace, for taking the money out of organized crime in this huge black market. It rivals apples in Washington State, the marijuana business, and it's all illegal, enriching and empowering gangs and organized crime. I was just sitting in my governor's house a couple days ago, Jay Inslee. He's so thankful that we've arrested 5,000 fewer people this last year because of 502, and that instead of enriching gangs and organized crime, we are generating literally tens of millions of dollars for Jay Inslee so he can have programs for educating, treating, and helping law enforcement. This is so right in so many ways. In Oregon, 13,000 people have a run-in with the law every year because of marijuana. That's very expensive. In New York was notorious for shaking down and arresting people on the street for marijuana. They did it at the end of the day because it takes 3 or 4 hours to book somebody on a marijuana possession charge, and these cops were getting time and a half. It was a scam for them, and it's ruining all these lives because they wanted to get time and a half.
You're listening to a talk by Rick Steves, recorded on October 8th in Beaverton on the topic of Oregon Measure 91, which would end marijuana prohibition in the state and legalize, regulate, and tax recreational marijuana.
When you look at who speaks against Measure 91, I challenge you to ask, what is their motive? What's their passion? Why are they going around the state and talking about this? Our most outspoken opponent was making $3,000 a day for his gigs, and his plane ticket was paid for by pharmaceutical companies. You should know that when he says you should continue locking up poor people and black people in the state for marijuana. You should know that. I'm down here because I got nothing better to do. I should be up in my office selling tours and writing guidebooks. But for me, this is a very exciting opportunity. I'm down here in my own penny because I think it's good citizenship for people to speak out. And I think the United States needs progressive states like Oregon and courageous states like Oregon and Washington, Colorado to end this war on marijuana. So I get to speak out. I get to talk out. I'm not talking to travelers here. Well, in a way, they're travelers. But this is Hempfest in Seattle, where we have 100,000 people getting out. And I've been talking here for 10 years. And it's a celebration of civil liberties. And I get a chance to go to Europe and hang out with people who just see it differently. And I think this is just an exciting opportunity. I just have about 10 more minutes, and I want to quickly just go through some notes about drug policy here before we call it good. There's four dimensions of the marijuana sort of debate and discussion. Some people think ganja is just great. And some people think it's a very important industrial thing. Some people are really into the medical uses of marijuana, and other people are interested in civil liberties, pragmatic harm reduction, and public safety. That's the end I'm coming from, quite obviously. I think there's cases for the others, and that's just a different lecture. You know what Measure 91 does? It legalizes the purchase of 1 ounce for adults. It doesn't change anything for kids. It doesn't change anything for medical or workplace rights for employers or driving on the road. It's still a felony to drive intoxicated. It's a smart law. I want to stress that. It wasn't a smart law 2 years ago. In 2010, California had a law that was too pro-pot, and it didn't work. Washington and Colorado learned from that, And in 2012, we had some more mature public safety-oriented laws, and we got more votes than Obama did 2 years ago. Your law has learned from our laws, and it's smarter yet. It's a very mature law. That's why law enforcement and people that, legislators and people in public service that understand the needs of safety and public are endorsing this. My friends who are really the wonks in drug policy reform in this country call this law the gold standard of marijuana tax legalize and regulate laws in the United States right now. You have a very smart law, and it can be tweaked by the legislature after it wins. That's important. I want to remind you that we don't have a utopian drug-free society, and we never will. And there are people who are our opposition just saying use is going to go up. Well, it's already up. And it's not going to go up more, and you're not going to have a drug-free society. There is a reality that people smoke pot. It's the same reality that people drink beer in the 1920s and 30s. And it takes smart, courageous people to realize that the laws against it are causing more harm than the apparent drug abuse itself. When you think of the status quo right now in our country, 800,000 people a year are being arrested for marijuana possession. 80,000 people are in jail today because of marijuana charges. You've got a huge black market all over the country enriching organized crime. You're arresting 13,000 or citing 13,000 people a year here. 40,000, you know, when you think of all of the numbers about this, in Mexico, 40,000 people have died in a very bloody turf war because of drugs, to a great extent because we insist on keeping it illegal. Think about No Country for Old Men. It's an American law that criminalizes this stuff and makes it like gold and all this fighting over it. Some Oregonians are nervous, and they say, why do we rush into this? You know, it's not a reckless thing to do at all right now. It is working in Oregon, and it's working in Colorado. The Brookings Institute has studied Colorado, and they've assessed it, and they have concluded that none of the scare tactics have panned out, and all in all, it's working well. Of course, it's a bumpy road because it's innovative, but your law has benefited from our experience, and I'll tell you, 13,000 people running in with the law in this state every year, that's reason enough to not delay this, and we need Oregon to pass this so we can take it to California next year.
Yes.
All right. I'm glad you responded to that because, you know, you can say, let's just talk about what's good for Oregon. This is a very big issue. It's good for, it's important for the United States. In fact, it's good for the whole world because, as I said, the United States insists on keeping this criminal. And because of Washington and Oregon, there's countries in Latin America now that are much more bold about taking the crime out of the equation and dealing with this with a pragmatic harm reduction point of view. Uruguay has legalized, for instance, because we have broken the lock that our government has on this issue. So we've got a track record. Very, very quickly, use will not go up. I want to stress that. Every country's track record has learned from their experience that use does not go up when you regulate. There'll be a little spike in usage, and then it'll settle down, and it'll just be boring. We'll take the sexiness out of it. And, you know, the Dutch, they hardly know what marijuana smells like. The musicians and the bohemians smoke down there, and the tourists get all giddy to check it out. But for the Dutch people, it's just not an issue anymore. That's important. A lot of people say it's a gateway drug. The only thing gateway about it is the illegality of it, because then it's sold on the streets by criminals who have a vested interest in getting you hooked on something that's more addictive and more profitable. I'm running out of time, so I can't talk about a lot of these issues that I have just skirted. I do want to remind you that I want to review the reasons to favor this. There's the Jim Crow aspect of it. The NAACP looks out for the concerns of the black community in our country. They have endorsed California's attempt, they endorsed Washington's attempt. The NAACP understands the racism built into this law. Again, it's poor people and it's people of color that are getting arrested, and it is a devious way to disenfranchise black people, frankly. That's just so important. Fiscal responsibility, it's a huge, smart way to honor the limited resources of your law enforcement people to let them refocus their important energies on real crimes instead of running down petty pot-smoking things. We can learn from history. In the 1930s, Mayor LaGuardia in New York said, when a society has a law on the books that it does not intend to enforce consistently and across the board, the very existence of that law erodes respect for law enforcement in general. We have a law right now that is a laughingstock. It is, cops are in a very disrespectful and difficult bind because they know it's not right, but their job is to enforce the laws. I was tailed by one of Gil Pilikowski's guys up in Seattle when he was the police chief up there. He knew my lecture as well as I did when I was giving this talk, and I became friends with him. And he's a beautiful man. He's the police chief of Berkeley right now, Mike Meehan. And he's a good guy, but he's wired to see it in this sort of anti-drug kind of crusader way. After dinner one time, I was stepping out with Mike, and he just said in a candid moment, "Rick, why are you so into this? You're a rich white guy. You can smoke pot for the rest of your life with your friends and just use some common sense, and you'll never get arrested." I said, "That's why I'm into this, you know? That's exactly why I'm into this, you see." We had a law in Seattle 10 years ago called I-75. Best we could do then. And it made marijuana arrests the last priority for law enforcement. We couldn't go against the federal law. We just said, when you've done everything else, then you can deal with marijuana, essentially making Seattle stop arresting pot smokers. A lot of people thought this was a little bit too much. 10 years later, friends and foes assessed that law, and it was a beautiful thing. Teen use did not go up, crime did not go up, DUIs did not go up, money was saved, and law enforcement resources were redirected. It's a beautiful thing. So this is a big year. This is a very big year. We had the evolution in medical marijuana. It was led by the West Coast, and now half of this country is honoring the need for medical marijuana. And as long as states have smart laws and follow them well, the feds have stayed out of it. If the state has a chaotic law and they just joke about it, the feds come in and bust them, okay? You've got a smart law here. This is the next evolution of that as we break the prohibition of our age. Washington, Colorado have done it. You're going to do it, and Alaska's going to do it. And to me, this is really quite exciting. I want to remind you, we've got a little while before the election. The turnout is an important issue here. If you want to learn more about it, you can go to the VoteYesOn91.org or .com website and read all about it. If you go to my website, ricksteves.com, right on the homepage, you can click drug policy and read about everything I've written on this. You can get these notes for this talk if you want to share it. If you go to YouTube, my talk I gave 2 years ago in Spokane is on YouTube. And it's a nice tight 18-minute look at this if you've got friends that like to more about it. And it's pretty much applicable to what's going on now. Just go to YouTube and look for Rick Steves Spokane. And if you just Google Rick Steves marijuana, you'll learn more than you ever wanted to know about it. I just want to thank you for your interest in this and remind you, this is not hard on drugs or soft on drugs. This is an opportunity for Oregon to take the lead to be smart about drugs. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a talk by travel writer and TV host Rick Steves, given October 8th in Beaverton, in support of Oregon Measure 91. If passed, the measure would end marijuana prohibition in the state and legalize, tax, and regulate recreational marijuana. This is Ken Jones for KBOOZ Radio Z.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball on the Day of the Dead, November 1st at 8 p.m. The lineup for this annual event includes Vagabond Opera, Shervona, Gothic Burlesque Belly Dance, Wandering Performers, Haunting Music, Ritual, Art, and the sincere honoring of those past. That's the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball. November 1st, 8 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm Rusty Butler, a Siletz tribal member. I got in trouble with the law when I was 14 years old and spent my teenage years behind the bars. My culture and traditions helped me find my way. I now work with the Siletz youth in my community. Hear my story on Prison Pipeline, November 3rd at 6:30 p.m. Nanta Srinagi Thai, Nanta Ho, 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 Nanta Ho.
And that's it for public affairs programming for Wednesday morning. It's October 29th. Jazz Lives is up next, so stay tuned. But first, it's the KBOO News at Noon.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, October 29th, 2014. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, inmates in the San Francisco jail will be receiving tablet computers to assist them with their studies. The jail purchased 125 computer tablets for the 1,300 inmates who are enrolled in its independent accredited charter school. This action is expected to increase inmate ability to access education and to reduce recidivism.
The Portland Opera will perform the entire 2016 season during a compressed 12-week summer period. While several other national operas have folded in recent history because of economic problems, this is being done to stabilize years of fluctuating finances for the Portland operation. The change is expected to save the company between $400,000 and $500,000, about 8% of its annual budget.
The Washington, D.C.-based Tax Foundation has identified Oregon as having the nation's 12th best tax climate. Oregon ranks 4th in sales tax structure, with no sales tax, and 15th in property tax structure. Tax structures are ranked according to their complexity, burden, and economic harmfulness, and rewarded for transparent and neutral tax codes that do not distort business decisions.
In national news, many low-income students who have done well in school fail to attend college or enroll but never complete a bachelor's degree. Now, a charitable group financed by Michael Bloomberg will fund a network of college counselors to advise students on where and how to apply for college admissions, as well as how to secure financial aid. Only one in three top-performing students from low-income families attend college, with high six-year graduation rates at least 70%.
Apple Computer has introduced a new mobile wallet that allows holders to pay using their smartphones. Timothy Cook, Apple's chief executive, announced at a conference this week that the company has already sold 1 million